The CIO job has gotten its share of bad press over the years, including the dark joke that the acronym stands for Career is Over. But boy, is that joke getting stale. As businesses of all stripes become more information and digital-centric, the CIO role is no joke for companies. In fact, the job has become central to a business's critical operations, including generating revenue. Hi, I'm Linda Tucci, senior news writer for SearchCIO.com, and with me to discuss the evolving role of the CIO is headhunter Sean Banerjee. Sean is managing director of the global technology practice at Russell Reynolds Associates, a senior executive search firm in New York. Sean recruits CIOs and CTOs across a variety of industries, from banking and insurance to publishing and media to energy companies. Sean, welcome.
Thank you, Linda.
How long have you been headhunting CIOs?
For the better part of a decade now, Linda, really close to 11 years.
So can you break it down in phases and talk a little bit about what companies were looking for in CIOs when you started, what was on their wish list 5 years ago, and what are they asking for now in their chief information officers?
The role of the CIO has been an evolving one over the course of really the last decade. And in the last 3 to 5 years, we've seen some fairly material changes in terms of the expectations and actual requirements of the job. I think if we go back to the late 1990s, when I first started recruiting in the space, the expectation of a CIO was essentially to be a large-scale project program manager, someone who, if they were able to operationally ensure that the systems in place actually worked, that the proverbial trains ran on time and the associated bells and whistles went off when they were supposed to, that was really about as much as organizations were looking to get out of their CIO. With the run-up to Y2K, this really cast kind of a greater light on the function, and those CIOs that were not only able to deliver against successful Y2K remediation, but also began to take on some of the well-documented large-scale ERP implementations, be it SAP, Oracle, PeopleSoft, that were also in vogue at the time. Those events really conspired to bring the CIO role out of the darkness and into the light, if you will, in terms of corporate America.
And today, what's the difference?
If we look at the CIO role today, it's interesting in that in the current iteration, it really is for a business leader, someone with very strong commercial skills and vision, who also is a superlative business operator. So it's expected that those trains run on time. It's expected that the lights go on when they're supposed to. Those are the table stakes for the job. Now, the role is a direct contributor to forming business strategy and market strategy. In content and information-intensive businesses, the CIO is playing a much greater role in respect to taking ownership of product development. And that transcends the actual technical elements of building and delivering products, the actual aggregation and monetization aspects of building products. And we see this permeating a host of industries, you know, many of which may appear to be quite disparate, from financial services to media and entertainment and many other industries in between.
Why do you think this change is taking place? Is it because the technology has changed, or is it because business models have moved on that the role of the CIO is so different?
Some of it is event-driven, given the regulatory climate of the last 5-6 years, things like Sarbanes-Oxley and other perhaps more industry-driven regulation. So that's one element of it. But the other is also interesting in that there's been a greater permeation of technology in the home. Many organizations and individuals, if you went back 10, 15 years ago, maybe even 5 or 6 years ago, the office was still the most advanced place in terms of technology. It was not necessarily in the home. And now with the proliferation of technology in the home and the level of sophistication and comfort that users have with technology, and they get to the office and they say, you know, I've got better connectivity at home. I've got better feature functionality and capability at home. Why can't I do it here? And that has put increased pressure on corporate technology in the office of the CIO to be able to deliver a more fluid, more functional, more user-friendly experience
Sean, can you tell us more about CIOs increasingly being asked to monetize IT assets or come up with new products for the company?
It's really been in the last, 2 years that we've seen that become more mainstream, if you will. But historically, the CIOs have often been in an ownership position around data and information assets within the organization. I mean, at a purely technical level, they may have, had accountability for the marts, the stores, the warehouses, et cetera. Those individuals, the more progressive ones, were able to look at those assets, analyze those assets, and then in collaboration with their line partners or other functional leadership, determine ways to take those assets and actually build commercially viable products. And that could be re-engineering existing products and figuring out, in the past, we simply weren't able to take this information and productize it because the technology wasn't there to understand what we had on our hands, or it wasn't there to deliver it. But with the technological advances we've now seen, the ability for organizations to productize heretofore non-commercial assets, or to re-engineer commercial assets and monetize them in new and innovative forms is very compelling. If we look at industries that in the past were used to selling their content on a one-off fashion, I have an information product and you buy it from me as you need it. Well, CIOs who are accustomed to leasing software in the emerging model of software as a service, SaaS, they now say, wow, why can't we apply that same premise in how we deliver content to our customers? So why don't we go and embed our content, our proprietary information assets, in the workflows of our customers, and instead of charging them on a one-off basis, we are going to charge them on an annuity basis. So instead of selling 10 high-priced products, we're going to sell them thousands and thousands of products on a SaaS basis in an annuity model, and we're going to make a lot more money and be a lot more profitable. So that's just one example of how CIOs are taking data and information assets and figuring out new and innovative ways to productize and monetize those assets.
And what about other IT leadership positions in demand? Anything you're seeing out there that's new and different in terms of who companies are looking for IT expertise?
Well, I would share this. I would share that in the course of our work, the mandate remains fairly consistent in that we, Acme Company, are looking for a chief information officer who is really a business person, albeit has functional expertise in technology. So that's a pretty consistent kind of macro mandate that we're given. Where it changes is the genuine emphasis on that commercial acumen that's expected of the individual to bring to the table. So strategic vision and planning no longer means simply being able to select an ERP system and operationally project manage it to a successful completion. That's certainly very important still, but the added dimension really is what decisions is this person taking and how is that affecting our business at a strategic level, meaning we're thinking about getting into a new market, or we're thinking about divesting an asset or making an acquisition. What role does technology play in that? The valuation of the acquisition or the divestiture, the speed and time in terms of accomplishing the overall integration, selecting service provider partners that will allow you to drive this kind of change and transformation in the most effective, low-risk fashion. What products should we be considering? How are we going to deliver those products, as I mentioned? These are the things that this next generation of CIO that we're looking for has to be able to bring tangible examples of successfully executing on. I think CIOs for a long time, wanted a seat at the table, and then when they got it, were shocked at the expectation placed upon them from a business standpoint. I think that now you're seeing another generation, iteration of CIO who understands that and is actually embracing it.
We're talking today with CIO recruiter Sean Banerjee, Managing Director of the Global Technology Practice at Russell Reynolds Associates in New York. Sean, you've referred to the most effective CIOs as being helicopter managers, or people who can zoom up for a long view and as easily check out the details close up.
Absolutely, and I think that nimbleness and frankly, flexibility, perhaps bordering on being a contortionist, is really a key competency for a successful contemporary CIO, because in any day, in any week, in any month and quarter, they are going to be expected to be superlatively operational and ensure that the fundamental constructs of technology are working in a high capacity, consistent, sustainable fashion. At the same time, they've got to have their other eye on the business and what they can be doing, not just to enable the business through implementation and automation, but what they can be doing to strategically advance the commercial interests of the enterprise, revenue, profitability, as well.
I have to ask you the salary question. Are CIO salaries flat? Are they inching up any faster than salaries for other positions in the company, or going down?
I think when one goes from industry to industry, there can be significant delta in how people are compensated, of course, and size and scale and scope can play a part of that. That said, the CIO role is one that, in certainly my career recruiting in the space, you know, has increased. We've seen it increase. Today, despite kind of market volatility, the role of the CIO continues to be very important and perhaps even more important. And with it, we've seen salaries at a minimum stay where they are. In some cases, it's incremental increases, but the reality is most of them, because of the nature of the role, the visibility of the role, and the importance of the role, they tend to parallel the pay constructs of their CFO, COO, and, you know, other functional peers, and even that of kind of a broader executive cadre. So if an organization is placing a greater emphasis on rewarding their leadership through equity or deferred compensation or tying that to specific business results, the CIO is, in all the cases that we're involved, is participating in that same program. They're not, you know, treated as, well, you know, these four people are part of the equity recipient team, and, you know, IT is really not. That used to be the case in some organizations. That is not the case anymore. And if organizations expect to attract the best CIO, they need to include their CIOs in part of that compensation model.
Good news. We've been talking with Sean Banerjee of Russell Reynolds Associates in New York. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate this advice from an expert.
Thanks so much, Linda. Anytime.
And thank you for joining us today for the SearchCIO.com podcast. I'm Linda Tucci, senior news writer for SearchCIO.com. For more information on this and other CIO topics, log on to SearchCIO.com.